Hello, welcome to episode 12 of the Perfectly Imperfect podcast. I'm Rose, and I'm here with
Linda.
I made her awkwardly say her own name. I want to start off, before we start talking about what this episode's going to be about, and before getting into it, I really do want to take a moment to acknowledge everything that's going on in the world. I know that the past couple weeks have been deeply disturbing for both Linda and I, and while neither of us can understand what it is like for people of color right now, or, you know, throughout all of time, we want to know that we do stand with you and want to help and continue to have our voices heard to help other people hear, get their voices heard. I don't know if you have anything to contribute to that, Linda.
I'm glad we're saying something about it, and I agree. It's been difficult to kind of watch what has happened and kind of grapple with the fact that Rose and I won't understand what it's been like to have those lived experiences. But I just want to stand with you guys, like Rose said, and really advocate for white privilege, people with white privilege, to do the work themselves, to educate themselves, and to stand with people of color and, you know, purchase things from Black-owned businesses, follow people on Instagram that are people of color, and really do the work to educate yourselves on what those lived experiences are like for them, so that we can all help each other and lift each other up.
Yeah, we say that we're all a team, and I think Linda and I both like intend to make it like that. Like, we're here to support everybody, and, you know, like, I feel lucky to be able to have my victory in the LGBTQ. Like, we have our rights for the most part, and I just want to play my part in helping another movement get theirs, because everyone deserves, you know, to have their voices heard. And it honestly, it really fucking pisses me off. Mm-hmm. And I know that, like we just said, I don't understand fully, but yes.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I appreciate that. And if anyone like wants any recommendations or needs some like ways to educate themselves, I've been reposting some of them, and I've been saving a couple Instagram posts that I've seen some from other really, really awesome people of color that have been posting. So I'd be happy to share those with anybody or follow someone that has been posting it. So
yeah, we could even do a post or put it on our stories on Instagram of those handles or businesses or anything like that that we've been like supporting and reposting. So
totally,
I feel like that'd be good.
I like it.
All right, well, to kind of move into our topic for today, so this week we want to talk about what eating disorder recovery and like being recovered from an eating disorder looks like, and kind of talk about what our definition of that is, and I guess like within that, the controversy that we see throughout the dietetic community, and I guess also just the eating disorder community in general about what that is. Yes. So I'll stop stumbling over my words now and also say that we tried to record this episode last week. So last Sunday, we tried to record this episode, and afterwards, Linda and I kind of looked at each other through the Zoom meeting, and we're like, fuck, I don't like this very much. we recorded the whole thing and we said what we felt in that moment, but I think through talking with each other, we realized that we were actually figuring it out still, like what these definitions look like. And so after that, we were kind of like, all right, we're going to take a week, we're going to kind of reflect on this and then go back to it. And within that time, we were texting each other and kind of had a lot of different ideas. I know Linda can speak to that a little bit. So.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting that our ideas did change, and it speaks to the fact that this whole topic, what recovery from an eating disorder looks like, is kind of ambiguous, and people have different thoughts and opinions because it's not a black or white subject.
So with that, I think we both kind of have a similar definition of what recovered means. And I think, you know, for both of us, and this is kind of, I feel like a little more widespread, it's just like not engaging in behaviors, not having the thoughts, like you know, ever, or if they are present, like maybe like once every very like now and then, just very few and far between. I also think like in some ways, like for some people, it might be like being disgusted with the thought of being in the eating disorder. So kind of just keeping it completely like away, just not wanting it to be intrusive in your head anymore, which plays into not having the thoughts, you know, of the eating disorder behaviors. So this just basically just being completely out of the eating disorder. Like I think last week, Linda even said like being able to look at it as like a third person, almost like it's like over there. It's not part of me anymore. While still acknowledging that like it was part of you at one point and it's why you are who you are today, but it's just not, they're no longer intertwined. They are completely, you know, the hands are separate.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree. And I do think it's important like to say that recovered, if a thought comes up, it just doesn't have any weight in your mind, right? So like even if there are those few and far between thoughts that come up, it's just, there is no pull from that thought, right? So I think that's important too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, while in the past maybe someone comments on your body or your weight, or you see your weight, and in the past maybe that would trigger someone to do a whole ton of behaviors, which I'm not going to list, mm-hmm. you know, in case people, that is triggering to somebody who might be listening. So instead of like, you know, letting that falter, it's kind of like acknowledging the thought like, oh yeah, this person said this. I understand that in the past, this kind of like took me down a spiral, but now like it really just doesn't have any weight. Like, you know, and you can like think about it, it can still bother you, but it's not going to cause just this whole series of like crazy events to happen like they did in the past.
Yeah, and I think it is important to say like recovered doesn't mean that the memories of the eating disorder might not be there. Like you might remember that in the past that could have been triggering for you. But what we're saying, I think, is that if someone's recovered, that it means that something that was triggering in the past isn't triggering currently. Right. But not that the memory of that being triggering in the past isn't there.
Right. I mean, I think it would be like, you know, like impossible, you know, for a lot of things to not remember that that was triggering.
Right.
Unless someone was like so wrapped up in the eating disorder that they weren't aware of like what was going on. Mm-hmm. But I think that that is something like that is part of the work in recovering from an eating disorder, is understanding what triggers you.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of plays into another like part of what recovered means, at least like in my opinion. I think that someone needs to have kind of like gone through those instances or events that in the past triggered them. So I think to say like, for someone to be like, yes, I'm recovered, like I'm never going to go back to the eating disorder, but to not have encountered any of those things, whether it's like getting a bad grade or seeing your weight, or, you know, being around a group of friends that was once triggering, which like in that case, like, yes, like it is like okay to completely avoid it, but certain things are unavoidable in life. And just like, if something was like so just immersed in your eating disorder, I think you have to encounter it while you're recovered to really know that you're recovered and to feel confident in your recovery.
Yeah.
You agree?
Totally. And I think that reminds me of, I forget what it's called, but it's essentially like exposure therapy, right? So someone with OCD has to encounter or like expose themselves to things that might normally feel compulsive. So if someone like sets down a phone and like has to have it in a certain position, well, they need to practice setting down that phone and then not engaging in that behavior for it to kind of reset their brain. It's the same with eating disorders. There's a time and a place to do it when you're trying to recover, of course, or if you're recovered, like that should be an okay thing to test out. But for someone who's recovered from an eating disorder, it's important to kind of expose yourself to things that were triggering in the past to kind of check in with yourself and say, okay, yeah, I'm good. Like this was triggering for me in the past. And now I can see and feel for myself that I don't have those same thoughts. They don't hold any weight in my mind. So totally. I think that's an important part of feeling and being recovered.
Yeah. And I think that's like a process too. Like that's part of eating disorder treatment, whether it's inpatient, outpatient, partial, whatever it is. Like there are like meal challenges, you know, like meals that you know, might have been like a 10 on a scale for someone of like a fear food, mm-hmm. which means that they just like were like, I guess it's like self-explanatory. They were afraid to eat the food. They might think that A, B, and C might happen if they have the food. Like, that's part of eating disorder treatment, is to be exposed to those, because how else are you going to recover? Like you said, unless you are like working through the stuff that causes you the most pain. And like, there's a time and a place for that. You know, someone who just starts out with eating disorder treatment isn't going to be exposed to a fear food, like a food that's like a 10 on the fear scale. Mm-hmm. That takes time. And so that's why, like, I think it's good to kind of like test your recovery, you know, to put yourself in those situations, to hang, you know, out with certain people or in a certain environment that was triggering, to like know, and to just to have the confidence, like, mm-hmm. you know, because I think it's like one thing to say like, yes, I'm recovered. I've never tried to do that again, or I've never been exposed to that. So like, maybe if that happens, like I actually wouldn't be recovered, and like this or that would happen. Like, that's like almost like a fake recovery.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it's a little naive to think that, you know, oh, if I just don't go in those situations, then I'll be fine, and that means I'm recovered. Like, that, I think that's a little naive to think that you're recovered if you haven't exposed yourselves to things that's may have been triggering in the past. And I also think that over time, the more you expose yourself, it's almost like the more you're able to trust yourself in those situations, because you've succeeded before prior. So I think that's another reason why that is so important to being able to kind of work through recovery up to being recovered.
Right. And I think like it's good to acknowledge here too, that there are instances or situations that are okay to be completely avoided. Mm-hmm. So if you have a traumatic past with an individual, like whether it's like, you know, sexual trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, yeah, I don't think you need to go hang out with that person again. Like, totally. If that person was a piece of shit towards you and is unsafe for you to be around, then yeah, I think you can be 100% recovered and never step foot in that person's vicinity. In fact, depending on the situation, I don't think you should go near that person
again. Right.
And I think it's like being able to, you know, have that, what's the right word? Distinct between
discern.
A situation. Huh?
Discern.
Thank you.
I think that's
I don't know. Had a brain fart. It's a big difference, you know, between saying like, yes, I am recovered, but I don't want to deal with that anymore. Like, I'm going to be fine. It's fine. I never have to eat a whatever again, or go to a mall again, or something like that. That's something that, like you said, is kind of unavoidable. And like, I think deep down, someone will know if they need to encounter that again.
Yes.
But maybe to go into an environment that was really, really toxic, whether it's a person, whether it's a physical place, to know that like, I don't need to go back there. I'm still going to be fine. In fact, that's dangerous for me to go back to, or there's no need. Like some people with sports, there's no need for them to go step on a basketball court mm-hmm. again, or like a weight-based sport again. Like mm-hmm. that's totally fine. You don't need that in your life.
Yeah.
So yeah, to be able to discern between the two, I think that's actually huge and showing a huge sense of maturity as well.
Yeah. And then related to that, I also think like as you move through recovery up until you're recovered, like what you find important to engage in might change. So someone, you know, exercise or a sport might be a huge part of their eating disorder and how they kind of identify themselves. And once they're recovered, it was a huge part of how they identified themselves, or, you know, what they did in life. And once they're recovered, it might not feel like as big of a deal. They might not feel that draw to the sport. So I think what feels important to you can change kind of in the same way that it's important to figure out what's appropriate for you to engage in or not engage in.
Right. And too, like, you know, people, I think later on in recovery do like recognize like, oh yeah, that sport was actually like 99% eating disorder driven. I mm-hmm. actually don't care about that. Like, I think for exercise, like sometimes that happens with people. Yeah. Some people genuinely love exercise. And then some people are like, wait a second. Like, I mean, you know, like a certain type of exercise, or even just like, you know, people find other forms of movement that they like, or they don't like, you know, I want people to do whatever they want to do. So
totally.
And that's part of, like you said, the recovery process is like something's intertwined, and to kind of like have them separate and to see them two distinctively mm-hmm. to know. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we're both in agreement on that one still to this day, a week later.
Yeah. What do you think about when things might come up that are kind of like blind spots that people might not expect to happen once they feel like they are recovered?
Right. I think, so in my opinion, like, I think someone can be fully recovered and something like completely out of the blue can happen. So let me kind of like rephrase that, like use a real life example. Mm-hmm. I, you know, am in the eating disorder field as a professional now and, you know, growing in that field and exciting RD in that field.
Hashtag RD to be.
Hashtag RD to be. And so I've seen and I've also heard, you know, from RDs that right now, quarantine, the coronavirus, people's eating disorders have spiked. Whether they, you know, it was that tipping point for them to realize that they had an eating disorder or they were fine and they relapsed. No one expected, like, even in like November or December or January, when all this shit was starting to happen, that this is what we were going to be living in. Mm-hmm. I, for one, started hearing about the coronavirus and was like, nah, this shit isn't going to hit us. We're going to be fine. Like, I was in the hospital, like, working my clinical rotation and then started having the fear. And I was like, oh, shit, like, this is actually a big deal.
Yeah.
No one could have known that they were going to be in quarantine and that they were going to have all these stressors, that certain parts of their life were going to be taken away. Maybe it was exercise. Maybe it wasn't being able to go to the gym anymore or see certain friends. Like, I know for a lot of people that, like, not having that social aspect in their life was, like, awful. Like, a lot of people are going through depression. Like, it's very common and it's very like no one expected that. Mm-hmm. So I think like someone who might have been living in recovery thought that they were recovered could easily fall back into an eating disorder now, because it's just like this was a traumatic experience. So I think, like, you know, it's very different from the thing of like putting yourself in a situation that, you know, you need to like grow from to know that you're recovered, or to like avoid certain like people or environments that you know are not healthy for you. If you don't see it coming, how are you gonna prepare for it? Like, you know, and with that, like, I think if someone did fall back into this eating disorder or have a relapse, I think it is important for them, like once they start getting the help again, to kind of like reflect. And I definitely think any practitioner would do this to help them like realize like, okay, was I actually recovered? Was I actually fully recovered, or was I holding on to little bits and pieces? Because I think a lot of the times, like, you know, in that recovery process, yeah, they might still be in recovery because they're holding on to something that they weren't aware of. Like, mm-hmm. It can become like easy to just like kind of put a blinders up to mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I really love that. And I do want to say this is kind of where Rose shifted my opinion last week. So last week, I kind of felt like, you know, if you're recovered, there's literally like nothing in the world that could happen that would make you fall back and have an eating disorder. And as Rose was talking, and I've talked with my sister about this and asked her what she thought about it, they were kind of this camp where, you know, if there's something unexpected, or, you know, you can have blind spots to things that you might not be aware of, then, you know, things can come up. And I, as I thought about it, I was like, you know, that makes sense and is totally valid. And I think about it in the same way that eating disorders are often a means to cope with some sort of trauma or anxiety or stress. And if someone's not aware of a stress that can pop up, or if someone has a different kind of stress that comes that, you know, they haven't felt before, then it would, you know, seem like a possible, plausible kind of idea that they might turn to an eating disorder, whether or not they were recovered before. And so I really like that point about, you know, the analogy or the comparison to what's going on right now with the coronavirus. You know, it's completely unplanned. It was a blind spot for everyone. It's very stressful. It's very anxiety provoking. It's a collective trauma we're all experiencing. And so, yeah, I think it's a really great point that, you know, you do have to be aware that even if you're recovered, there can be things that you're not aware of that could bring it back up for you. And I think it speaks to the fact that you need to have things in place and kind of your antennas up when stuff like that happens, to be aware that that is a possibility.
Yeah. And I think, like, I completely agree that you have to have things in place. And I also, like, want to do a little, like, small aside. When I was, like, coming up with this, like, idea that, like, you know, there is, like, the possibility of, like, anything can happen, what helped me to come to this realization was, like, if I'm sitting across from my client in the future and they're telling me like, yes, like I was 100% recovered. Like, I don't understand what happened. I didn't see this coming. I'm not going to invalidate that. Like, that is like 100% real. And like, mm-hmm. we're seeing that today. Mm-hmm. So it like, it's kind of like coming from that empathetic standpoint. Like, I don't know what someone is going through. I don't know how they're going to react to a situation. And like, I want to be able to sit with someone and be like, yes, you were recovered. Congratulations. Like, you really, really were. You did that work and you felt confident as fuck. Mm-hmm. And like, just something happened. And like, yeah, you can't prepare for something that you didn't know was going to happen. But yes, like you said, I think there are things in place. And I think that someone who is very, very strong in recovery will probably not falter back into their eating disorder. And I think it's because, like, I think part of it, you know, being recovered is knowing that we don't know what's going to happen and to have a support system set up in case something does. So it's to not be ignorant that like, oh yes, I'm fine. Everything's fucking dandy now. I'm never going back. It's to know like, yeah, like I'm going to have these things set in place because I never, ever, ever want to go back there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I think everyone needs to see a therapist in general for life. But if not, it's like to have one that you can can call up and be like, actually, like, I think I might need a little bit more help right now. To even have a dietitian. Obviously, I support having a dietitian, a psychiatrist, friends, just people that know that like your past or that are there to help. Because like to think that, like I just said, to think that, you know, something can happen and you're all alone. Like, we just know that we're people need other people and they need that support. So,
yeah. And yeah. I think too, like eating disorders in and of themselves can be or feel very secretive, right? So I think the idea of a stress coming up and having people that you can turn to and say, hey, you know, I'm struggling. I feel like this could stress me out. You know, can I talk to you about it? Like, I feel like that's a step, an active step that you can take to not make it feel secretive. And that, you know, that can kind of change the narrative in your own head and not make it feel similar to what you had felt before.
Yeah. It's to have the intent. It's like to be very intentional with your recovery, mm-hmm. to know that like you are someone that is susceptible to, you know, whether it's another eating disorder or we know that addictions go hand in hand, just like mental health type of things. Mm-hmm. Like to be very, like, it's like you almost have to take an active role constantly to know like, yes, like if this happens, like I am going to go to Linda and I'm going to talk to Linda about it, or like go to your therapist or something like that. Because like, you know, we know that other dietitians or therapists, like who are working in a field also get help from a therapist. Like yeah. They see someone because they're encountering things like that every day. So it's like, it's actively knowing that you are going to encounter something hard and to have that support system there so that you're not just sitting back and kind of being very passive and letting things just pile on, pile on, pile on. It's like having an eating disorder and being recovered from it. Like, you know that you might have to work a little bit harder to stay healthy, like mentally and physically, than someone who hasn't had to go through mm-hmm. it.
And I think about this in terms of going back to if people think recovery is or isn't possible, right? And one of the reasons that people might say, oh, I don't think recovery from an eating disorder is possible, is because they think that they have to, like, quote unquote, think about it for the rest of their life. And I think what we're saying is you should take an active role in your recovery, and you should be aware that you've had that experience and recognize that you should have things in place to prevent that from happening. But I think where we kind of distinguish from the fact that some people think that it's not possible is we're saying that having a strong, powerful role in your recovery and making sure that there are things in place to prevent it from happening again is being recovered. And I compare it to like someone with diabetes. Someone with diabetes has to check their blood sugar and make sure that they're not going hypoglycemic or not going hyperglycemic. And it's a condition that they have, and they have to be aware of it. There's no way around it, right? It's the same, I think, with an eating disorder. And once you're recovered, I know you can't recover technically or whatever from diabetes, but once you're recovered, you still know that it was part of your past. you're still actively taking a role in your own recovery and making sure that it doesn't happen again. And yes, you don't have the thoughts. Yes, you don't have the behaviors necessarily. But that doesn't mean that you can't still be an active participant in your recovery and staying recovered is how I kind of think about it.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's kind of like just like preparing, you know, for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad like we're both there with that too. And I hope like, you know, anyone who's listening who, yeah, might have struggled with an eating disorder or works with people with eating disorders, like, kind of hears that, because I think that is very important, you know, because it provides space for people to, like, take care of themselves. Because I think, too, like, if someone thinks, like, okay, once I'm recovered, like, I'm recovered, that's it. I'm, you know, like, I'm on my own, like, I don't need help from anybody else. Like, that's like when the eating disorder is gonna, it's gonna find its way in and it's gonna hit that person even harder. So it's being, that's a form of self-compassion, mm-hmm. is to like understand that you can reach out to people whenever you need, and it's actually good to have that support system ahead. It's coping ahead. It's preventative care, mm-hmm. you know?
Totally.
Like while we work on like thinking of a very, like a better way to prevent eating disorders in society, like, let's work on helping those people who are recovered to stay recovered. And by acknowledging that it's a lifelong process of making, like, taking care of yourself.
Totally. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And I think with that, we've also kind of discussed that there's, what, different levels of recovery?
Yeah.
Do you want to speak to that a little bit, or you want me to kind of start?
You start, because I think last week when we tried to record this, you kind of spoke to this, and I thought you did a really, like, I liked the way you put it.
Okay. Ugh. Well, that's a lot of pressure. So, yeah. So I think that there are levels to recovery, and it's almost like thinking about like the other side of the fact that we don't know what traumas we're going to encounter. We don't know what positive things we're going to encounter in life. So, you know, like through recovery, we're learning more about ourselves. We're learning about our values and like, you know, what we want to carry on into our recovered life. But at that same time, like say like someone, you know, just sees being recovered as being free from the eating disorder thoughts, like not returning to this environment because like, I'm kind of iffy about it, you know, but like later on in life, more things happen to them. Like maybe they get in a relationship and they're like, oh, like recovery means like I have room for like a romantic relationship in my life. Like, that's cool. I didn't see that. Like,
yeah.
You know, or like going back to school or like, you know, rejoining an environment. For some people, it's athletics, to be able to step foot into like the basketball court again or something like that. Mm. So I feel like I'm butchering how I said it last
week. I like it. And kind of what I was thinking is it's like if someone has an eating disorder, they might not have a concept of what life could be like without that eating disorder. And so their first step might be, you know, to not feel scared to go to a restaurant and to be able to order something that they enjoy at a restaurant, or to not have certain thoughts, right? But, you know, then, you know, they feel more comfortable with that. And as time goes on, they kind of realize, okay, you know, I still have these thoughts. I didn't realize these were necessarily my eating disorder. That could just become how their mind works and who they feel like they are. And so as time goes on and they, you know, get further in their recovery, it can almost be like, wow, I didn't even realize that my life could be like this. I didn't even realize that I could let go of that, or that that was even part of my eating disorder. And so it's almost like a stepping stones into different phases of, wow, that's, you know, I didn't even realize life could be like this because I've had it masked by an eating disorder this whole time. You know what I mean? And so I think slowly you kind of chip away at different parts of the eating disorder, and that can kind of be how you slowly step up the stair ladder to being recovered.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, you reach being recovered, you reach being free of the thoughts, the behaviors, things like that. You feel like you're never going to go back. And then like, as time goes on, like you just said, you realize like, you're realizing everything that the eating disorder took away from you, mm-hmm. and you're getting that stuff back. So it's almost like, you know, you are recovered from the eating disorder, and it's like the next levels are like I just said, like getting back the things that the eating disorder took away from you. Mm-hmm. So it's, and I think that's very powerful. Someone might not have realized like 2 years ago that, oh, the eating disorder was kind of like a stressor in my relationship with my family. Mm-hmm. So like 2 years later, they're like, oh, like I'm able to spend more time with my family. Like I didn't even realize that like this was something that was putting up a barrier, because like we said, eating disorders are secretive. It would make sense that it would like kind of like hurt different relationships.
Yeah.
And same with like I said, like romantic relationships. It's like, oh, I didn't even know. Because like you don't know until you like encounter a romantic relationship that you're like, oh, maybe that's why it didn't work out with other people.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, because it was a three-thing relationship.
Uh-huh. There was an eating disorder in the way.
Not a throuple. It's like you're in a throuple with your eating disorder. You eating disorder and then your romantic partner. So it's like you're, you know, building your life again, the picture. It's like, here's a little analogy.
There she
like
goes.
You have, when you're doing watercolors and you have that little drop in the middle, or you have the water all over the place,
uh-huh.
It's like you put that drop of paint in the middle and it spreads.
Yeah.
So it's like getting, being recovered is like putting that drop in the middle, and then over time it's all going to spread and you're mm-hmm. going to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, and through that, I think it's just strengthening that you're recovered, because it's like, once you realize like the stuff that the eating disorder took away from you, which might be a lifelong process, you're like, oh, well, yeah, fuck that. I'm really not going back to that. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
I love going over to my family's house and like having dinner with them, and like, or having that romantic relationship, or like, oh my God, I really love having a positive relationship with running. Like, that's cool.
Right.
Didn't think that like that was even possible. So it's, yeah.
And I think part of it, like we discussed earlier, is kind of going through those different parts of life that the eating disorder had intertwined itself in previously, and being like, wow, today I didn't have a thought about that. Like that thought, you know, that would have come when this person said something didn't cross my mind. And isn't that amazing? Or I have time to do this thing that I've always wanted to do because I'm not spending time worrying about what I'm going to eat or not going to eat, like that sorts of thing. And it kind of opens you up, and it is like it should feel empowering as you kind of uncover those different layers of what a life of being recovered looks like. So, yeah.
It's like, you know, you work hard at school, you study to do well on a test. If you're an athlete, you're like maybe lifting weights, or like, you know, you're running track, you're running different,
workouts.
I think I just had an interruption. Thank you. You're running different workouts to just strengthen like how you're going to perform on something.
Mm-hmm.
So it just makes sense that like throughout this time, like you just need more time to practice being recovered,
mm-hmm.
to just be like stronger at recovery. It just
makes sense. Yeah. I think that's important to say too. It's like, it's just like, you know, you run races, if you run track and you have a bad race, there are going to be times in recovery where it feels hard, or where it feels like you don't know if you should try to overcome that, you know, aspect of your eating disorder that feels really safe or, you know, like comforting to you at that time. And I think it's important to say that like those times will come in recovery. We're not saying it's easy. We're not saying it's like, oh yeah, you just like uncover these things and slowly check them off the list. It's hard and it's work, but it's worth it, I think, is what we're saying. And I think an overarching message of this podcast is like, we think recovery is possible. And so hopefully that's a heartening message to hear for people.
Yeah, I think it's like inspirational. And I kind of want to touch on the whole, how this, I think this kind of applies to the whole, like, if someone had an eating disorder and is recovered, can they work in the field? Which I think is a big, strong yes. What do you think, Linda?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's super valid.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, why do we think this? Well, I think who else is better to, you know, be on that journey with someone into recovery who has been through it themselves? Like, you know, there's the level of understanding and empathy. And that's not to say that someone who has not gone through an eating disorder and has not gone through recovery is not going to be a great practitioner. Some people are just amazing at this stuff without having to experience it themselves. And, you know, even better than some people who have. But I think that there is just something powerful in like any aspect of life, is to like be able to walk hands and hold that hope for someone being that you've experienced the same thing as them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I really agree with that. And I think there's something to be said, like, you can read about things in books, you can learn what people have experienced, but to have gone through something yourself, I think, gives you an extra level of empathy and understanding of what that person could be going through. Not to say their experience will be the same as yours was, but to say that you understand from, like, an emotional level of what they could be going through and have extra empathy and understanding of what they might be going through since you have experienced it yourself.
Yeah, and someone, it's like, you know, I've been, like, looking for, like, some jobs kind of, like, you know, just, like, small little jobs. And so many of, like, the behavioral health stuff, they, like, or, like, peer support specialists are saying, like, if it's, like, an addictions facility, they're saying, yeah, we want someone to work here who has gone through the 12-step program themselves. And it's just because, like, they know what to expect. They know that, like, maybe steps, like, 4 through 5 or, like, you know, week 2 through 3 in eating disorder treatment tends to be very hard. So it's like to be able to sit with that person, because a lot of the times when someone's going through treatment themselves, like, their brain is so jumbled up, they can't hold that hope for themselves. They don't understand. They're like, oh, I'm going to be stuck like this, like, forever. Or they're like, mm-hmm. oh, shit, this isn't going to work. And, you know, for someone to sit across from them, whether they say that, like, whether they acknowledge, like, I know, like, I've been through this myself, or they don't say it, it's still, there's, like, this level of understanding and compassion that I think people can pick up on.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like, it is also important to say that the person sitting on the other side, the practitioner, it is important for them to have done their own work and for them to feel very confident in their own recovery. But I think it's also very powerful to have had that experience and to be sitting across from someone who's going through that now, and to be able to hold that space for them and to be able to understand what they might be going through and to be able to empathize with what they are going through. So I think that can be super helpful just in counseling someone through it. And I do want to say that I understand the fear of having someone who's had a past eating disorder kind of working with people who have eating disorders. But in some ways, like we talked about, like, I do think it can be beneficial if they've done the work themselves, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when someone is looking to work in this field, other people do need to just kind of have a trust in them that they are recovered and, you know, that they are being genuine, because, like we've said earlier, you can, you know, hit off all those checkpoints. Someone can have a checklist and be like, all right, well, for this person to recover, they need to hit X, Y, and Z. But, you know, the person who is recovered, only they really know where they are. And so if they are coming to you and saying, yes, I'm recovered, I'm feeling great, you know, then you have to take them as their word, on their word for that. And, you know, a lot of practitioners want to do that for their patients. But for some reason, when their patients become, you know, practitioners themselves or are trying to do that, then they get a little bit worried. And like you said, it's understandable. But I also think it's important to note, too, like, someone who's gone through treatment and is getting help and having that support system, like we talked about, having the therapist on hand or the friends and family, I feel like they're in a much better place than someone who might not even be acknowledging that they're having eating disorder, like, thoughts or behaviors, or might be full-fledged in an eating disorder and working, honestly, with any population with nutrition, but especially eating disorders. And that happens a lot, too. So, you know, just because someone has gotten their shit together and, you know, worked on it, then I think that I personally think that's more powerful. But then again, you know, we meet everyone where we're at. You know, so not everyone's able to, like, are not ready to start working on their stuff. So I'm not discounting those people at all. But I think to just, like, look at someone and just say, oh, well, you went here or something and you can't work in this field now, you're awful. Like, no, like, in my opinion, they're better. And because they've dealt with their shit and know, like, that, like, information about themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And, I think that's kind of powerful to maybe to end on, and a good sentiment. And I do want to say, like, obviously Rose and I's ideas about what recovered looks like literally has evolved within a week. And I'm sure we'll continue to evolve as we hear more people's stories. And if anyone reaches out to us with their opinions or thoughts, and as we start to even work with people once we become credentialed, So I don't want to pretend like this is like an end-all be-all thought on what recovery looks like or being recovered is or means. But this is kind of our thoughts, and we hope you got something out of it.
Yeah. Yes. Please, please, please tell us what your thoughts are on this. I'm not the best at posting on social media, but I'm going to, and I would love to get some feedback on this episode and just about what recovery or recovered looks like to y'all. So yeah. I find that very valuable, totally. Especially for us in our future work.
Totally. Yes. Agreed. Cool. Well, that was fun, Rose. And I believe we will have I already have an idea for next time's episode. So stay tuned. It's going to be great.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.